WMAL News at 7. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. Pope Emeritus Benedict XVI is dead at 95.
Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger was elevated to Pope in 2005 at the age of 78.
Lord Cardinals have elected me, a simple, humble worker in God's vineyard.
He was known as a staunch conservative who condemned relativism, radical feminism, homosexuality, and consumerism. At the age of 86, he became the first pontiff to resign in nearly 600 years, saying he could no longer keep up with the demands of the job.
I did this in full liberty for the good of the church.
Dubbed the Emeritus Pope, Benedict retired to live the rest of his days in prayer.
Fox's Courtney Walsh reporting. Legendary journalist Barbara Walters has also died at 93.
Her first break in broadcasting was as a writer and researcher for NBC's Today Show. In 1972, she was the only woman reporter to accompany President Richard Nixon on his historic trip to China. In 1974, Walters became co-anchor of the Today Show, which had started her career. Just 2 years later, in a surprise move, she joined ABC to anchor the evening news. She interviewed every president and first lady since President Nixon and became known for asking questions to which everyone wanted answers. Eric Shawn, Fox News.
One woman is dead and another hospitalized in critical condition this morning after they were hit by a driver trying to avoid being pulled over by the Secret Service. Agents tried to stop the vehicle near the White House around 4:30 yesterday afternoon when they noticed the license plates didn't match the ones registered it, according to Lieutenant Paul Mayhair with the Secret Service.
The suspect fled at a high rate of speed. And as he went through the intersection, he struck a vehicle and then struck two pedestrians. Our officers immediately ran to give first aid to the pedestrians, called for MPD backup from their EMS units.
One of the pedestrians died. The driver of the vehicle that was hit was okay. Police were also able to arrest the suspect. They expect to file multiple charges against him. There are 34 new Virginia State Police troopers. The 138th basic session graduated yesterday. They'll spend the next 3 weeks at the academy getting hands-on training before heading to their assigned patrol areas. As we're getting ready to wrap up 2022, there's some more incentive for you to not drive drunk on New Year's.
Maryland MVA is teaming up with Lyft to give residents free rides this weekend. Thanks to a grant from the Governor's Highway Safety Association, every Marylander can get a $20 credit to use on Lyft through Monday using the code NYE Make a Plan 2023 in the Lyft app. There's a limit of one credit per resident. In the last week, roughly 1,000 people have been arrested in Maryland for driving under the influence. Maria Leaf on WMAL and WMAL.
WMAL Sports, the Wizards beat the Magic 119-100. Up next, traffic and weather on News Talk 105.9 WMAL. WMAL traffic from the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
If you're traveling in Prince George's County this morning, be on the lookout for a disabled vehicle on the outer loop at Maryland 202. In Landover, it is causing a right lane closure and some major backups. And swinging over to Montgomery County, we're seeing some emergency road work in place on Maryland 28 in both directions, causing some ramp closures. Be sure to take caution as you pass by. And if you're traveling in Virginia on I-66, it's looking clear in both directions. And in D.C., 295 is up to speed, and we're seeing no backups on the 3rd Street Tunnel. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Areas of fog through this morning and then humid today with temperatures making up to about 58 to 59. Overcast skies and on and off rain showers. I'm 7 News meteorologist Jordan Evans in the First Alert Weather Center.
Right now, 51 degrees in Washington. I'm Heather Curtis on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Now on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
The Saturday morning update.
It is the Saturday morning update. It's hour two. I'm Rick Fowler. John Gizzi is with us. He is the White House correspondent and chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. John, Republican Congressman Kevin McCarthy was on the Fox News channel last night, seemed very confident that he will become the next Speaker of the House. What are you hearing about it? Because you're a little closer to reality, maybe, than somebody that thinks he's going to win.
Well, part of it is to remember that Kevin McCarthy needs 217 votes as of today. Congressman Don McEachin, a Democrat from Virginia died unexpectedly after the election, so there is a vacancy in the House. If there are any other absences from the House on January 3rd, if a member of Congress has COVID or misses a flight back, then that reduces the presence of the members on the floor, and it reduces the numbers needed to win. Privately, supporters of the Republican leader are expecting that the controversial Congressman-elect George Santos of New York, whose resume and background about education, net worth, and even his religion, will at least take the oath of office Tuesday and vote for McCarthy. What happens to him after is going to be determined by several investigations, including from the district attorney of Nassau County, New York. Now, if McCarthy fails to reach that threshold, it will go to a second ballot. Many say that at this point, Steve Scalise, the majority leader and the right-hand man of McCarthy, would emerge as the speaker candidate. Highly unlikely, Scalise once again weighed in for his friend from California and is a McCarthy man all the way. A second ballot would be a first in a century since 1923. And if that occurs, perhaps the Gang of Five, as they're known, the five right-of-center lawmakers, might just break and turn around and back Kevin McCarthy. If they all were in his corner now, he would probably be a shoe-in on the first ballot, albeit a narrow victor. We'll have to wait and see Tuesday.
So my guess is that Kevin McCarthy is hoping that Andy Biggs is on a Southwest flight from Arizona, right?
I would say he certainly is, and he'd probably pay for the ticket.
What else do we have on the agenda in the House next week?
Interesting you say that. Late Friday afternoon, Majority Leader in Waiting, Scalise, released a list of 10 measures that he wants to pursue in the first 2 weeks of the incoming Congress. These include legislation that would deal primarily with China. That is high on the Republican agenda, and it would include a measure to have tougher penalties for Chinese penetration of U.S. business and products, the intellectual theft we've been hearing about for years, and it would investigate China's assault and undercover work against American business in this country. There's also two measures dealing with illegal aliens in the Scalise agenda. But one other thing, Rick, that should be noted. While he has bills crafted to deal with the hostile Chinese or those who are coming in the country illegally, Scalise and others would privately admit that what the Congress will be known for are two letters in the alphabet. O is for oversight, and I is for investigation. There will be at least 10 to 15 hearings probing different things that occurred under Joe Biden's watch. Chief among them, I'm told, is a House Foreign Affairs Committee investigation into the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan, which many say was bungled, others say was tragic. In addition, surprise, there will be an investigation into Hunter Biden and the first son's dealings in business abroad in Ukraine or in China. And then there'll be oversight hearings on the Department of Justice and its abuse, as well as those of the Federal Bureau of Investigation and the IRS. Watch for the raid on Donald Trump's home in Mar-a-Lago under the FBI oversight hearings.
Well, there's been a whole lot of build-up and hype to the release of Donald Trump's tax returns. Democrats have spent a lot of taxpayer money and a lot of time worrying about that. The tax returns released at probably the quietest time of the year you could possibly do it, going into New Year's weekend on the Friday before the holiday. What do we need to know about that document dump?
Well, There's one new word that we're going to hear a lot of, and it's already making the rounds on social media, nothing burger. What we are learning is what we expected. First, it is almost a certainty Donald Trump was nowhere near being a billionaire. He had a lot, but not as much as people imagined or he'd like them to believe. Overall, it will show that he took advantages of the loopholes and the regulations in the 11,000-plus page U.S. tax code that other Americans, millions in fact, take advantage of, especially those who can afford accountants. And indeed, already we know that in the 2 years preceding his presidency, he lost money in a very big way, $105 million in 2015, $73 million in 2016. He carried over the capital losses, and as a result, more often than not during his presidency, he paid fewer taxes than he ever had, although he was hit for $1 million 1 year when he was in the White House, and in 2020, paid zero taxes. Again, this is going to be made out to be something nefarious and misleading and possibly law-breaking. But so far, no one is saying anything like that about the returns. One more thing. How will Democrats use these figures to hurt Donald Trump? Well, I don't know what they're planning, but I know that the Trump-hating media is casting a suspicious eye on the amount of interest his three oldest children paid him back for loans he made. Specifically, daughter Ivana Trump gave him $24,000, son Don Jr., $8,715, and son Eric, $24,000. Now, those are big figures for interest for anyone. But again, we're talking about a man worth millions and his children who are comfortable. What will happen to this? Who knows?
Well, we saw the loss of life in that snowstorm that struck Buffalo. And this was Governor Kathy Hochul's first real crisis as an elected governor. And where does this go in terms of her leadership and the criticism thereof?
The governor managed to scrape through to winning a full term of her own after succeeding disgraced Governor Andrew Cuomo in Albany. When she was faced with her first crisis, the governor is under fire for the timing in dispatching rescue, for the work and coordination with officials in the city of Buffalo and Erie County. Overall, one leaving out the details of the Hochul response, it should be noted that as of Friday evening, 51 people died in the snowstorm. And the mayor of the city said that it is probably the worst disaster in the history of Buffalo. One other thing, the city council president in Buffalo has said that climate change was a reason for this. Governor Hochul has basically weighed in with that. Her performance leaves much to be desired. However, it should also be noted the media is not attacking her for this or opening up any criticism of the Empire State chief executive. Let's go back a little bit when the hurricanes hit Florida earlier this year and Governor Ron DeSantis, conservative Republican, was under fire for his handling of the crisis. It seems there's a different standard when tragedy strikes states that have governors of different political persuasion.
John, you and I have talked about your wife, Colleen, over the years on the air, and your friends and colleagues were all very saddened to hear of her passing this past week after a very long illness. And obviously, we all extend our sympathies to you. And I was reading the story in the Detroit News, the headline, Colleen House, a political trailblazer for the Michigan GOP. And reading the article, I mean, she had an amazing political career in the state of Michigan starting at the age of 22.
She certainly did. And well before I met her, I certainly was aware of her, as was anyone who follows American politics. When she was unable to train as a Pan Am stewardess, which was her ambition after college, she worked on a congressional campaign and was elected to the State House of Representatives at 22, the youngest woman then or now to be in the Water Wonderlands state legislature. I might add that Colleen did so during the Watergate year of 1974, and she was a Republican. She went on to serve four terms in the State House of Representatives, and in 1986 became the first woman to run for governor of Michigan. She lost the primary to Bill Lucas, county executive of Wayne County, and he turned around and asked her to be his lieutenant governor candidate. It was a big Democratic year in Michigan, and the Lucas Engler, that was her name at the time, ticket lost. Colleen went on to work in the administration of George H.W. Bush, was a key player in the census in 1991 and the resultant congressional redistricting. When the administration left town, she went on to work for the International Republican Institute for more than a quarter century, helping infant democracies learn the skills to have fair and free elections, some of them for the first time. For my part, I can say I admired my wife as well as loved her beyond words. She was my business manager, my home editor, my very best friend. I'll miss her very much, but it's the compensation is that so many others who knew her and whose lives were touched by her remember her the same way.
John, I know that all of your friends and all of our listeners' thoughts are with you at this time.
I know.
And thank you for being with us this morning, John.
Rick, my pleasure. As Colleen would say, the show goes on and the news doesn't take time off. Farewell, my beautiful angel.
The consummate gentleman, John Gizzi. It's 7:21, the Saturday morning update on WMAL. And we head off to the WMAL Traffic Center.
If you're waking up in Prince George's County, be on the lookout for a disabled vehicle on the Beltway Outer Loop at Maryland 202. There is a right acceleration lane block, so be sure to take caution as you get on. And in Rockville, Maryland 28 is closed in both directions due to emergency road work between the ramp from South Stone Street Avenue and South Washington Street. And if you're traveling in the district this morning, DC 295 is up to speed, as well as the Southeast Southwest Freeway. And in VA, if you're traveling up from Lorton, I-95 North is looking clear going into the Beltway. I'm Benia Brown. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Look for areas of fog through this morning, and then temperatures will climb into the 50s once we get past 9 o'clock. Wind staying light out of the south. Humid today with temperatures making up to about 58 to 59. Overcast skies and on and off rain showers. I'm 7 News meteorologist Jordan Evans in the First Alert Weather Center.
46 degrees in the nation's capital, and coming up next, the psychology of New Year's resolutions and talking politics in 2023. Stay with us. It is a Saturday morning update. It is New Year's weekend, which means New Year's Day, and that means New Year's resolutions. And, you know, we take them grain of salt. You make a resolution, a couple of weeks, you kind of move on because you didn't fulfill it. But it could have an impact on some people. It could have an impact on your children as well. So we're going to talk with Dr. Dan O'Neill. He has authored Survival of the Fit, How Physical Education Ensures Academic Achievement and a Healthy Life. He is a sports psychologist. And when we talk about this, a lot of the sports psychology comes into resolutions and fulfilling them and what happens if we don't. Also, we're going to touch on politics and the psychology of how you feel about politics in 2023. Dr. Dan O'Neill, thank you for joining us on WMAL.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me. Also, I should point out my day job was an orthopedic surgeon for many years. And then I realized part of the issues that I was missing with my patients was the psychological aspect. So I went back to school and got a doctorate in the sports psychology.
Interesting. Well, New Year's resolutions, you know, we all make them and most of us break them. But if you, you know, get something that you really want to accomplish and then you fail at it, you know, what is the psychology of that?
Yeah, this and this has been really looked at aggressively. And I personally love New Year's Eve. I love this concept of, you know, Janice looking backwards, and but most importantly, looking forwards in January. And to look forward is a really a very human thing. And so I think people have kind of gotten off the tracks with this. And as you say, they make a resolution and then, you know, a few weeks later it's over. And so what I look at it is really about goal setting. And we should all be goal setting, you know, all the time. And we really are doing it all the time. Even if it's, Chris, I want to get to the dry cleaners before they close today. You know, that's a goal that you set and hopefully you can achieve. So I like to sit down my wife and I do this, but we, you know, with all of the family and other people, and we talk about goal setting. Okay, what do we want to accomplish in 2023? And personally, I break it down into personal issues, professional issues, and physical issues. And I think that that really does focus you on getting things done. And we now are in the habit of breaking out those goals on the 30th of June and saying, okay, how are we doing after 6 months, you know? And I think for your young people and for those with kids, you should break out the goals maybe every you know, 3 months and say, okay, how are we doing in terms of accomplishing these things?
So what about the discouragement? How do you handle it as an adult, and how do you handle it with your kids if you fail at the resolutions?
Right, so goal setting, the most famous way people think about goal setting is SMART goal setting, and that's specific, measurable, and attainable, and realistic, and time measured. In other words, you give yourself a small meal. What's your goal? Your goal is you want to visit Aunt Jenny in the Upper Peninsula this summer. Great. How are you going to then attain that? That seems like a realistic goal. Do I have the time to do it? When are we going to do it? And then you get it put down on the calendar and you write it down. And I think that the mistake that people make is they make these vague goals or resolutions, but then, you know, they don't write them down, but they're just too vague. Well, I want to lose weight. Well, we all want to lose weight. We all want to get stronger. But unless you come up with a plan to do that, you're going to be disappointed. And so we want them to be measurable, but mostly we want them to be attainable.
We've seen the polarization in the country over politics. It seems to be getting worse, not getting better. What would you recommend going into 2023 on dealing with family members or friends who are 180 degrees the opposite and may not really want to tolerate what you're thinking or saying?
I think that, you know, what I try to, you know, have people look at is that really that big picture. And, you know, what are really important in life? Because this is really what gets back down to those resolutions and those goals. What's the important thing in life? Well, the important thing is that I only have one mother and I only have one father and I only have this many cousins or whatever it might be, or friends. And to lose that because of something that you have no power over that happens in Washington or in your state capital or in your county board, that's insane. You have no power over that. And that's where the goal setting, again, we talk about that SMART goal setting. You have to, you know, do things that you have control over. You don't have control over politics. You do have control over turning off the television and not listening to, you know, the things that make you upset. But we really, this is, I think, a fantastic time of year again with that concept of Janice to look forward and to look behind and say, you know, this is what's important. And at the end of the day, you know, these are my family, these are my friends, this is my neighborhood, you know, this is my community, and I want that to work for me and to get angry and to, you know, thwart things and to disagree and yell at the town manager at meetings, that's just not helping anybody. And again, and especially it's not helping you, it's not helping your stomach acid, and it's not helping your psychology. And what's important is making sure that you're happy and your family's happy and your community and your friends are happy, and then that's going to snowball into a positive.
Dr. Dan O'Neill, thank you so much for the insight. We appreciate you being with us this holiday weekend.
It's always my pleasure, Rick, and I would recommend your listeners, they'd want to go to my website, survivalofthefit.net, and remembering that we're all just these creatures on this planet, and again, that's where we can really communicate.
Survivalofthefit.net. Dr. O'Neill, thank you.
My pleasure, Rick, anytime. Happy New Year.
7:30 News is next with Heather Curtis, then back with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer and K.T. McFarland on WMAL.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.
News now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Good morning, I'm Heather Curtis. Days after Pope Francis said his predecessor was sick, Pope Emeritus Benedict XVI has died at 95. He stepped down as leader of the Catholic Church in 2013, saying he no longer had the strength to continue. He was the first pope in 600 years to retire. Pope Francis will celebrate his funeral mass in St. Peter's Square on Thursday. Groundbreaking journalist Barbara Walters has died at 93. She got her start as a writer and researcher with NBC's The Today Show. She became co-anchor of the show in 1974.
Just 2 years later, in a surprise move, she joined ABC to anchor the evening news. There, she received an historic $1 million a year.
But, Mr. President, you know one does not work for money. One works for love.
Walters went on to host a legendary run of specials with interviews no one will soon forget. She interviewed every president and first lady since President Nixon and became known for asking questions to which everyone wanted answers.
Fox's Eric Sean reporting. A man is in jail awaiting multiple charges after police say he led Secret Service agents on a chase yesterday that killed one woman and sent another to the hospital. It started around 5:30 on New York Avenue Northwest near the White House. Lieutenant Paul Mayhair with the Secret Service says agents noticed the license plates on the vehicle didn't match the ones registered to it and tried to pull the driver over.
As the officers approached the car, he sped off.
As he drove through the intersection of New York Avenue and 14th Streets Northwest, Mayhair said he hit another vehicle and two pedestrians, killing one. The driver was then arrested. WMAL Sports, the Wizards beat the Magic. Traffic and weather next. WMAL Traffic from the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
If you're waking up in Montgomery County, Maryland, be on the lookout for a road closure on Maryland 28 going both ways between South Washington Street and the ramp from South Stone Street. It's closed due to emergency road work. We are seeing a delay as a result. And if you're traveling in Virginia this morning, I-66 is looking good in both directions, as well as your ride up from Lorton on I-95 North. And once you get into the district, the Southeast-Southwest Freeway is up to speed. That earlier disabled vehicle in the roadway on the Beltway Outer Loop in Prince George's has finally cleared. I'm Vania Brown. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Dense fog this morning until around 10, then showers likely, a high near 57. Right now, 52 degrees in Washington. I'm Heather Curtis on WMAL.
It is the Saturday morning update for New Year's Eve. I'm Rick Fowler. We're at 7:35. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer joins us, author of Operation Dark Heart. He is the president of the London Center for Policy Research and the co-host of the Thought to Action podcast. A happy new year to you, Tony.
Happy New Year, Rick. Always great to be here. All these talking about years, year after year, and we're always here. It's always great. So thank you.
Well, it's always great to have you on and get your insight on the stories of the day and then the stories of the next week, including
sure.
The U.S. Congress, now in the hands of the Republicans in the House of Representatives, investigations to take place. One will be the failures in Afghanistan withdrawal plans. And, Tony, as we go into this, what do you see as sort of the things that the Republicans will be looking at?
Well, one of the things I'd like them to look at, and I've encouraged those I speak to on the Hill in leadership positions, that they need to look at the impact, overall impact of this failure, not only about the fact that Marines and a sailor died and all these other bad things happened, but what has happened regarding the overall posture of the United States based on this. But we'll see if they get that to that or not. What I think they're going to focus on appropriately is the decision making of those involved and what I believe now to be obvious lies told by a number of senior officers. And one of the biggest issues that people recognized even during that period was giving up Bagram. Basically, Bagram was the air base just north of Kabul. I spent a lot of time there during my two tours. That was a secure location that you could have actually isolated the evacuation operations from. And no plan, let me be clear on this, no plan that was produced by the Trump administration, who really started the plan, was Bagram in the cards to be given up. It was always going to be maintained. And I think that's going to be one of the largest issues when they walked away from this 21st century fully equipped base, literally abandoned it in the middle of the night, and then had to do everything from Kabul, which resulted in massive loss of life. So that'll be one of the key issues. And, of course, Mark Milley. Mark had made, I think, patently false statements to the American people on what was going on. And then, of course, Joe Biden. Joe Biden did receive the best military advice and intelligence about what would happen, and he ignored it. And I believe he ignored it because it was a political expedient that he wanted to just basically get it done without measuring the consequences of failure against what would be required to actually do it the correct way, and obviously retain, in my judgment, prestige, being able to kind of get us out of there without a total collapse, which I think was possible, but Biden did not care.
You know, when we see these hearings, often it's just a political food fight between the Democrats
right.
and the Republicans. Is there enough of maybe a common ground, or at least enough information that this won't look like the Republicans are out for revenge because now they're in the House and they can investigate anything they want?
Well, I'd like to believe that they will. I mean, again, the people I advise, I always recommend you put it in a cold light of day, fact-based interrogation and investigation. And that to me should be the way that they go forward to actually do the investigation and question it. I think a lot of good could come out of it. The problem is the Republicans are not going to be in charge of the executive branch, so whatever they come up with can't really actually be executed regarding implementation of policy. So that's going to be an issue. But, yeah, I'd like to believe they're going to be objective as you can be when you see a policy failure of this level. And, look, it's going to be brutal for those who made mistakes. It always is. It shouldn't be sugarcoated. But, no, you shouldn't go out looking for enemies when you can actually just expose the actual facts of what happened as your lead. So that's what I hope they do.
Announcement this week that Vladimir Putin will be hosting the Chinese President Xi Jinping coming up in the spring. What do we expect those two guys to be up to in terms of solidifying their relationships?
So it's interesting because I actually listened to some assessment last night of their video teleconference where they announced this. They called each other dear friends. That's unusual for world leaders to be doing that. That signals to many a much stronger, more resilient relationship coming. Not quite an Article 5 relationship, but they did specifically mention military cooperation. And so I think you're going to see these two world powers start getting closer if they believe the world's against them, especially Russia. Russia has a great number of resources, especially oil and gas, that China is going to need to drive its economy, and if they believe that they're working together is going to, quote-unquote, benefit their people, which is also a quote they used during this conference, they will do it. So I think you're going to see this indication that things are not frosty. They're not as frosty as people were led to believe regarding Xi and his relationship with Putin, and I think this is going to be something we need to pay attention to and put into our strategic thinking about how we're going to deal with the potential closer relationship, especially one that may include military operations between the Russians and Chinese. So this is no small issue.
You mentioned Putin not having too many
yeah.
friends. Vladimir Putin's rocket man became the fourth top Kremlin official to die under mysterious circumstances in less than a week. So he
yeah.
seems to be taking out his friends and colleagues.
Well, you know, it's always bad news when they announce you have a cold in the Soviet Union in the old days. So it's good to see that some things haven't really changed. So, yeah, I'm sure these folks all got developed a really bad case of global warming or something that resulted in their death. So, yeah, look, he's a thug. I think they're moving leadership around, retiring those permanently who have not performed to the level that Putin would have otherwise desired regarding the current war. I think this is part of their posturing to get ready for their return to the offensive sometime within the next 3 to 6 weeks. And, yeah, if you work for Putin and you don't really please the guy, you know, your retirement's going to include a very nice state funeral with all your relatives mourning you. But it's the Russian way that's carried over from the old Soviet Union.
They seem to be falling off balconies. It's odd the way that happens. One quick note, and then we'll move on to another topic. Apparently, the Iranian drones are still being used by the Russians to attack Ukraine, but Ukraine knocked out a whole swarm of them this week.
They have, and this is one of the things. This is a technology war as much as anything else. I mean, it's an interesting combination where you have literally World War I level trench warfare in some regions, but you have this massive use of new technology as well. It's a interesting proving ground for a lot of different concepts right now. And yeah, the Ukrainians are seeking a number of systems that will help degrade the Russian ability to use any sort of guided weapon against them. Everything from missiles, you know, the Patriot missile, to these smaller technologies that are being used in drones. So it's going to be literally a fight that people will want to study and understand. Because obviously, if there's a larger peer-to-peer conflict, we'll want to have learned some lessons about how these things are used on the battlefield.
So we know the southern border is a mess. We know that the Biden administration has done very little to try and stop the influx of the immigrants. Now, we're hearing that some of the Texas ranchers are now going to have to take things into their own hands.
So some of the articles indicate that you have a rash of violent individuals, illegal aliens, coming up and actually trying to break in to things and that sort of thing. So one of the things that's very clear at this point, Rick, is that citizens are going to have to arm up to defend themselves. And I think that's something that a lot of folks have recognized for a while. It's more relevant than ever, more important than ever when you see some of these events. There's actually some video of, you know, of these folks trying to break into a farmhouse in Texas where a woman is at. And obviously they're trying to figure out a way now, citizens, to arm themselves up and be prepared. It's a bad situation. And again, it's just not being addressed by the current administration whatsoever. It's going to get worse.
Well, that's the border. There's an article in the Daily Caller, the headline, "Cops fleeing six major Democrat-led cities in droves in 2022. Yeah. What does that mean for local law enforcement moving forward around the country?
Well, this is a problem because of these woke policies in these large cities, and it's becoming more pervasive in the suburbs as well in some of these places. The bottom line is people who live in progressive Democrat-controlled areas are it's less safe. New York particularly has gone down and doing badly. I have friends in the NYPD who retired over some of this nonsense. So you're going to see this fleeing of big cities and leaving citizens to their own. It's going to get worse in these large cities because that's the policy. The progressive politicians who are elected to be prosecutors will not prosecute. Return offenders are let out constantly. Something just happened in Riverside, California, I think 2 or 3 days ago, where a serial offender murdered a 32-year-old deputy. This is going to go on, and law enforcement are going to figure out they can enforce laws in a different jurisdiction and be respected and appreciated and safer than staying in some of these places where they arrest someone, they're back out 10 minutes later offending again. So as long as the progressives control these cities, you're going to see this flux and removal of these people self-removing, enforcement officers self-removing from these jurisdictions because, you know, as much as I'm sure these folks take an oath to defend the public, they don't want to be in a position where they cannot enforce the laws because the people above them will not enforce the laws. So it's a bad situation.
And what do you have on the Thought to Action podcast this weekend?
Well, we did another culture wars the insurgency with Sherry Curry and Nancy Quattro and my friend Jen Mathias from the Bell Stars in England had a kind of a rambunctious review of the world and issues. It comes out Monday. I think people are going to enjoy it. It's always fun to have the girls on, and people will actually learn a lot and a little bit of nostalgia from some of the rock and rollers of the 70s and 80s. So it's always fun.
Monday's a holiday, so everybody has a chance to listen. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, you can find the Thought to Action podcast at londoncenter.org. Tony, thank you so much.
Thanks, Rick.
7:46, Saturday morning update. We'll talk to KT McFarland next, but first, off to the WMAL Traffic and Weather Center this morning.
We are seeing reports of an incident on I-70 westbound after exit 91 involving one vehicle, and it's blocking the right shoulder, so it is passable, but you will see some minor delays as a result. And if you're traveling in Howard County, be on the lookout for those traffic light malfunctions on Highway 94 going in both directions at Baltimore National Pike. This is causing a major delay. Be sure to take caution. Some good news for you if you're traveling northbound on I-95. That earlier incident at the Fort McHenry Tunnel Toll Plaza has finally cleared. I'm Vania Brown. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Look for areas of fog through this morning, and then temperatures will climb into the 50s once we get past 9 o'clock. Wind staying light out of the south. Humid today with temperatures making up to about 58 to 59. Overcast skies and on and off rain showers. I'm 7 News meteorologist Jordan Evans in the First Alert Weather Center.
46 degrees in the nation's capital, 7:47, Saturday morning update. Saturday morning update continues. We're at 7:50, and we are honored to be joined by KT McFarland, President Trump's Deputy National Security Advisor, board member of the American Conservative Union, and the author of the best-selling book, Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. KT, good morning and Happy New Year.
And Happy New Year to you, too.
Thank you. Well, you know, New Year's Eve is that day of the year where we can look back on 2022 and look ahead to 2023. And we always appreciate you looking at the big picture. And what is your perspective as we make this transition into the new year?
Well, I think we can look back at 2022, and it's really, that was the year of Russia, right? The year of Russia, year of Putin, and all the knock-on effects that it's had on countries all around the world. So clearly, February, Putin invades Ukraine. The invasion didn't go as planned. And what are the knock-on effects? Well, Ukraine fought back. Nobody thought Ukraine would fight back. It revitalized NATO. The NATO countries looked around and said, wait, if Putin is going to invade Ukraine with no reason, just because he wants it and he can, we better watch out. We might be next. So all of a sudden you have countries like Finland, which has historically been a neutral country, saying we want to join NATO. So the enlargement and strengthening the purpose of NATO. NATO, in January of 2022, NATO was sort of an alliance without a cause. By February, March, it became a real alliance with a cause and a sense that NATO needed to be the last bulwark against a potential Russian resurgence and Russian movement into Europe. And then the energy weapon. I mean, to me, I've been warning about this forever, which is that Russia and oil-producing countries, but particularly Russia / Iran, because of energy, because that's their only export, oil, natural gas. The world needs oil, natural gas. As long as prices are high, Putin is rich because he has windfall profits from all those high-priced oil exports. If the price of oil goes down, as it did in the Trump administration with sudden American energy independence, Russia's broke because it doesn't have any extra money to pay for a new military, invade its neighbors, have proxy wars around the world. But when Biden comes in, war on American fossil fuels, the result is that Vladimir Putin is rich. Russia's rich again. It can invade its neighbors. And then the knock-on effect of that is the energy crisis, coming energy crisis in Europe. I mean, the Europeans, the Germans of all people, are going to have a really hard winter. In Britain right now, they're sort of rolling blackouts. There's a recession and a high inflation, in part led by the American decision to get out of the energy business and the Russian decision to exploit the energy weapon and the European decision not to have Russian imports. So as a result, energy prices in Europe today and this winter are going to be double, triple of what they were to heat your home last year. So It's the idea that energy is once again a weapon. We haven't seen energy as a weapon since the 1970s and the Arab oil embargo. The other thing is that the Russian military, we always assumed that the Russian military was really good. We assumed it was as good as ours. We were worried about it, but we never really saw them in action. And now it's turned out the Russian military isn't very good. It's a paper tiger. Its whole organizational structure just didn't hold up. And then the most obvious one, which is still playing out, is the weakening of Vladimir Putin. You know, what is his next move going to be? How does this end? The invasion of Ukraine didn't go as he initially planned. The initial plan of Putin, and which is what we assume that he told Xi Jinping when they met right before the invasion, was don't worry about it. I'm going to send in 150,000 Russian troops. We're going to topple the Ukrainian government. We're going to put in a puppet government that will take orders from Moscow. And we're going to destroy in quick order the Ukrainian military. Well, that stuff didn't happen. And for the last, since February, Ukraine and Russia have been slugging it out on the battlefield. And, you know, each one gains, one loses, but it's kind of frozen. And certainly, and that's not a pun about the freezing times that we're having ahead in the winter. But now Putin has sort of changed tactics. He doesn't want to just destroy the government of Ukraine or the military of Ukraine, leaving everything else intact so that it becomes a Russian puppet state, client state once again. He's now determined the only way out of this is to destroy Ukraine, to destroy the culture, to kill the people, to destroy the infrastructure, civilian infrastructure. That's why he started targeting, you know, electricity generating plants, water filtration systems, so that the Ukrainians this winter, anybody who's still left, is going to freeze, have no electricity, and probably no water. And so it'll cause a knock-on humanitarian crisis as Ukrainians try to flee Ukraine for other parts of Europe. So that's the year of 2022.
So as you look at 2023, there could be a window where Putin is weakened. Do you see anything in the Biden foreign policy that would allow us to kind of take advantage of that potential weakness in Putin?
No. I mean, yes, there are opportunities, but no, the Biden administration won't take advantage of them. And they're somehow, they have this pipe dream that, well, Ukraine has been such a disaster, which it has, that Putin is somehow going to fall and be replaced by some peace-loving Russian president who will pull out of all of Ukraine. Ukraine can be victorious and the Russians will be humbled. I don't think that happens. If Putin is replaced at all, he will probably be replaced by somebody who's even more vicious and tougher. You look throughout Russian history, when Russians have gone abroad and not succeeded, they've always been replaced by even meaner and tougher guys who have found a way to, quote, win and succeed. Putin himself came to power in the war during Chechnya 20 years ago when the Russians were losing the war in Chechnya. Very similar, they invaded Chechnya. They wanted to make sure that the Chechens were part of the greater Russian Empire, and they were failing. And so Putin comes in with scorched earth policies, quote, succeeds in Chechnya by basically destroying Chechnya. And that was the basis of his power. So he understands, as do the Russian leadership around him, that you don't topple Putin and then have somebody who's even weaker than Putin. It'll be somebody who will be tougher and stronger and, you know, more, I don't know, be more destructive of the world and Ukraine. So but it'll be the playing out of the 2022 story. The 23 story will be all about China. You know, Xi Jinping has looked around and said, okay, well, that invasion of Ukraine didn't go so well. I want to maybe do something a little different for Taiwan. I still want Taiwan, but I know that maybe some kind of an invasion might not go as well because we don't know what the allies in Asia will do to respond. We don't know what the Taiwanese will do, what the Taiwan military will do. But the other events that China is going to be driving, it's not just Taiwan and how to get Taiwan and take Taiwan. Will it be militarily? Will it be by a maritime blockade? Will it be for cybersecurity? Will it be by buying trade with Taiwan and intimidating anybody who might support Taiwan, intimidating them through trade? So it's a plan, but they're not quite sure how they implement the plan. And the other thing that China's going to drive is COVID. The reaction in China of COVID is going to hurt their economy. It'll probably help ignite a worldwide recession. And it'll show the Chinese model isn't so great. So the Chinese may have domestic problems. they're going to flex their military as a result because, you know, Xi Jinping has to look like a strong leader. So what will he do? He'll probably foment crises or create crises in the South China Sea to distract attention from his own country. And the other thing, it will be the knock-on effects of China, and whatever China will do in 2023 will be the response in Asia. Particularly, is it a possibility for a new Asian alliance? So Japan, Korea, Philippines, Australia, New Zealand, maybe India, and obviously the United States, can form some kind of a security alliance in addition to a trade alliance to stand up to China. So that's last year, and that's next year.
K.T. McFarland, the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. And we appreciate all of your perspectives that you've given us throughout the year of 2022 and looking forward to your analysis in 2023. Have a very happy new year, K.T.
And same to you and yours.
Thank you. And that's it for the Saturday morning update. The 8 o'clock news is next with Heather Curtis. And then it's Garden Sense at 1 o'clock now on Saturday afternoons.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9. WMAL-FM.